it has been a journey. Okay, let me say this right. It's the 26th of April, 2021, from the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California. Thank you. I haven't been able to do anything. I produced at least 3, maybe 4 webcasts that I've had to cancel out. I couldn't post them. The shootings continue. The mayhem in the larger cities where large populations of black people live. Black on black crime growing in shocking numbers. Conversations with a few neighbors of mine, disturbing to say the least. It appears that people think that arming up is the best solution. Man, you know, what happened? What happened to common decency amongst human beings? My neighbor told me over the fence, he said, "This is not the America that I grew up in." And he cautioned me. He said, "Be careful, John." He said, "Be careful." And I had to tell him, "I'm not afraid of dying." I know that sounds like severe, like, whoa, man, what's going on in the part of Los Angeles that you live in? No, what's going on all over this place? Anyhow, I had to chide it. Matter of fact, I just got off of a phone call, and a young man in his 50s said, "When are we going to hook up and do a Zoom meeting, and, you know, so that we can address these things?" And I said, What could we say? What could we say that made or makes any sense to anyone anymore? Nothing. I don't think we could propose anything. Have you been watching the news in India? The COVID deaths? Man, they're just showing people dying in the streets. It's something like a rendering of a movie that I've seen. My heart goes out to these people. But at the same time, I know that the narratives and the scripts have already been read. Man, I had no idea that the Academy Awards was yesterday until this morning. And I don't watch those awards like that, but Tyler Perry, I did watch his comments on a clip, and he made all the sense in the world. Why don't we just learn how to stop hating one another for a minute here? Now, I know Tyler's a rich man, a hard-working man. He earned every dime that he has. But he makes sense. Because it appears that And, you know, and in a way, I hope it's possible. I don't think it's possible for me to live in a society where there is no love and compassion for the other person. But there has to be respect for one another. We must respect the other person's difference. We must learn how to, and I believe that this can only happen with God's help. I don't think that you can do it on your own because there's too many forces pulling against what can happen in our individual lives. And there is more evil pulling us apart than good that's pressing us together. I have strong opinions about the way I want to live. It's becoming more and more difficult. Oh yeah, I know what I can talk with you about. I got the subject matter. You know, my friend Johnny Jones passed away in this last February. February of this year, Johnny Jones passed away. And a man that knew Johnny Jones because he took Johnny's position where Johnny used to work. Johnny was ill and he could no longer do what he did for over 30 years for the estate of a rich man who also has passed away. Both Johnny and his boss are dead. So I think that I can talk freely, and that'll be what this webcast will be about. The gentleman that took Johnny's position just discovered that Johnny had passed away a couple of days ago. He had my number, and so he calls me. And he was asking me something pertaining to Johnny Jones's disposition, because he said he appeared to be, when I came on the scene, very angry. I said, yes, he was. He's very angry. Very angry. And I had the opportunity to share with him the facts that I knew about Johnny's life when he came to Los Angeles from Wisner, Louisiana, where he spent most of his life until he was about 18, 19 years old. And then his mother bought him a bus ticket and sent him out here to live with his brother and to make a life in Los Angeles. And the man that I was speaking to is a Filipino man who comes from a foreign country. Like my wife was Filipino. And I was speaking with the man. I know the man personally. And I told him that you're my brother because I was married to one of your sisters. And I've grown to love the Filipino people with tremendous passion because my wife of 34, 35 years was Filipina. And what a wonderful journey that was. I don't think that I would be here today if Lucy were not my wife. If I had married a black woman, I would have been divorced or dead by now. Not taking anything away from black women, but I needed a woman that would be submissive to where I was coming from in life, because I didn't have room or the attitude to argue with a woman. Anyhow, I was sharing with this man, this Filipino man, about John's background, about his brothers, his mother, and I was basically telling him that when Johnny came out here to Los Angeles, he had just come out of the cotton fields, literally. And he had a pretty good track record. He became my chief financial steward in the church that I pastored. he garnered a real estate deal where we got a piece of property that was well over $1.5 million. He got it for $850,000. I mean, just a great deal. It was a great piece of property. I hadn't seen a real estate move like that in a long time. And Johnny was a man that had a good head on his shoulders, and he knew people. I discovered after having lunch with him, often as I did, right before he died, because he opened up himself and told me what he thought about me. And we were two different men, thinking on two different levels, and all of that. But he's gone. And I was explaining to this man, to this Filipino man, why he was difficult, why he was bitter. And there's one thing that Johnny said before he passed away. He said, "John, I don't want to live like you in this country anymore." He told me, "I'm ready to die. I'm tired of it." Now, I had recently heard those same words from my sister, who was 2 years older than me, who also passed away. I remember her jargon was, "I'm tired of giving my children instruction. It seemed like they never did get the issue. They're bringing their boyfriends up," but she had daughters. Her oldest son spent numerous years in San Quentin. I think he's out now. And he had children. And they're products of their environment and their society. And I said that to say this. People that live a long life, and like my neighbor talking about grabbing a shotgun because there's too many people coming across the border and America doesn't look like the America that he grew up in. And he was speaking like a white man that used to have white privilege, and that privilege is slowly dissipating from him. We're over the fence talking, having a friendly conversation. Because I love my neighbor, and I think he has some concern for me, too. But at the same time, I'm not oblivious as to what he was saying. He was speaking as a white man that felt like he was a minority. He feels pressured. The freedoms that he had are dissipating. And, you know, I told him I don't watch what he watches because I don't have a television, and I don't watch television, so I don't know what's going on. But I got to tell you guys something. With all the killings, the mayhem, man, I was looking at my life in the Shy again, and that young black man showed a scene of a man just shooting two women in the streets, shooting them. Pulled out a gun like it was nothing. One of the women was pregnant and shot. I mean, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And it's enough to make you say, "Okay, Lord, I got to tell you the way I'm feeling now. I feel like I wouldn't mind leaving here. Seriously, this is a terrible place to be mentally. And like I was just speaking with a man some 15 minutes ago over the phone, and he said, "Let's do a Zoom thing and try to give people a way out." There is no way out. capitalism is gone, it's gone. People are living the best way they can. Our particular individual faiths or religions have played out. Everything is too damn expensive. Wait a minute. I bought this little house for $18,500. I can buy a car for that now. Can you believe that? This house is worth, my last look, about almost $800,000. What? Property value and equity and everything else. I said, what? I was thinking also the other day, you know, just this heavy weight on me. You know, I pray, I listen to my sacred music, I read the Bible. I was looking at this book, Urban Apologetics, and I think Zarek said, well, it's a great read. I'm enjoying reading it, but it's too late. It won't work in America anymore. And there is so much division, hatred. I also was listening to Dr. Claude Anderson, and I never did get around to buying his book, Power Economics. I purchased that, and I'm thumbing through it. It's too late. Unless God intervenes in the midst of all of this, we're doomed as a people, unless God intervenes. Things are going up. Have you seen the price of lumber lately? I know, I just had a new front lawn put in, and the cost of products and everything is skyrocketing. It's just like it was prophesied in the Bible when it says that in the last days, buy a loaf of bread for $100. I wouldn't be surprised if we're on the way there. Everybody is being tested. No one wants, I mean, if they mention God, it's always in the form of capitalism. What can I get out of it? Not what can I do for my fellow man. I mean, Tyler Perry, with his little speech, when they gave him that special humanitarian award, made more sense than T.D. Jakes ever did. Simple sermon. We have to come to the point where we are literally loving one another. And stop with this hatred. What do you tell our young women? Stop fooling with these guys. What do we tell our young men? And my heart bleeds for the parents that's raising children now, because I don't see a way out of this mess. Talking about owning a house. What? You see what it does? See? I can't say the words anymore. I'm thinking about shutting the website down. Or at least the audio parts of it. I may write a few things now and then. But this killing of people
is starting to take its toll on me. No, I don't have a television. And I don't go to the news every day. I dare not do that, because that'll give me a headache and a half. We glorify things that ought not be. And then, you know, I was going to talk about this issue that I did all my research on yesterday, but I thought that I'd change my mind because I didn't want to go there. I knew that the whole webcast would be tainted with an old man's opinion of his worldview, and I would be sounding like a person that is not giving too much thought to anyone's worldview but my own. And so I could not do that. And then I had a few interruptions making me lose my chain of thought. And I just combed my hair and washed up a little bit. I haven't shaved. It's been kind of cool here in L.A. So, I mean, the wind, cold air. So I'll try to come back next time with something a little bit more fluid. Maybe find some music. Music doesn't even soothe the savage that's in the beast of me. I'm feeling a weight. I guess that's what I call it. I feel a weight. It's like we know better. And our young people, everybody's doing, just like in the Bible, everybody is doing their own thoughts, doing their own life, doing it their own way. They are not considering anybody else's opinion. And this division between white and black, and privileged and the underprivileged, the have and the have not, the gap has grown so broad that unless we cast aside the veneer of our fake religion and truly give deference to one another, we're going to self-destruct. I want you to listen to a plea from an older man. I understand a little bit about Dietrich Bonhoeffer now, because when he saw Germany in the late 30s getting ready to crumble and they voted that new chancellor in office, and the German people all around that region start praising him because he said, I can fix it. I can fix it. This is what we've done with politics. I can fix it. The Democrats can't fix it. The Republicans are laughing at Joe. They think he has dementia. And Kamala? She was a top cop here in California, locking up brothers right and left. Like the ex-president Obama didn't do nothing for black people. I don't know why a brother thinks Kamala's going to do something for him. There's too many freaking people on the globe, people of power tells me. Now, what's happening is there's an imbalance when you have more poor people that are not producing and helping towards the benefit of society, but using up society. That's going to make the conservatives very hot, because you can't keep giving everything away and having not enough of anything to put back in the pot. You just can't do that continuously and have a society that is going to achieve or to accomplish anything. You can't do that. Some of you may say, John, go get a drink. No, I don't want alcohol or drugs to, and I just had a meal of food. I'm not hungry. I don't want food. I want this to stop. I want you to join me individually, collectively join me, but do it when you're alone. Please don't choose an hour to do this in. If you're listening to this and you've listened thus far 26 minutes and 35 seconds into this thing, I want you to go to your God and petition him. Go to your God and petition him to have mercy on us. I know this sounds old-fashioned, but for the sake of your children and your grandchildren and your life that goes on, stop looking at Hollywood. Oh, God, help us. I didn't even know that it was the Academy Awards yesterday. Well, because I don't have a TV and I wouldn't look at it anyhow. But just looking at a few of the clips, just looking at a few of the clips and the people that spoke and them saying, taking the opportunity to, wait a minute, I got to say this. I got to say it before I pass away, because I don't want you to look. It was horrible the way that man choked George Floyd out. It was horrible to watch that, to let our children see it, to, and not that I believe in covering up anything, but it was a horrible, murderous, callous deed that that Chauvin guy did when he had his knee on the neck of George Floyd and he breathed his last. That was murder. You can put it in the courts and have it in any degree you want. But you know what I think was a damn shame? Them making George Floyd Square. You know, they named the intersections. Did you know that the crime rate in that area where he was killed has gone up so tremendously that the business owners are having to shut down? Did you know that George Floyd had a disastrous, a poisonous, an embarrassing, degradative criminal record of arrest and drugs and mayhem and foolishness? And now, if you follow the narrative, you see, that's why I feel heavy. Damn it, I'm feeling heavy, because he wasn't to be praised like that. These youngsters running up and down the street shooting people, shooting at the police at 2 o'clock in the morning. These are damnable individuals that should be either locked up or gotten rid of in any decent society. Would have done that. I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, because don't nobody want to hear no truth these days. George Floyd was not my hero. I know his face and his story and mama, 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 I can't breathe. I know how that is. That was a sad thing. And I know that some of us want to push that narrative. I know. I know. But I'm feeling heavy if I don't tell you that that's bullshit. That man was the kind of dude, when I see on the street, I cross the street and go to the other side. Trying to make him out like the teddy bear baby, the good guy. Because he called on his mama. Watch the first 5 minutes of the movie Saving Private Ryan. And you see them white boys dying on Omaha Beach crying for their mama when those German bullets was tearing through their chest and back and limbs being blown up. They were calling on their mamas too. You always call on your mama when you're in the death moan. And I feel sorry for George like that. But what did George do? And what is it that he didn't do? Oh, the jury had to find the cop guilty for killing him. But there needed to be another jury to say this. No, we can't spend all this money for a personality like that. That's not the... What is America going to look like 10, 20, 50 years from now? What are we going to look like? Man, look at Tesla. Aren't they something? They're putting these rocket ships up, right? Putting these rocket ships up there. Man, look at here. They thinking about going to Mars. They want to put, Tesla wants to put another man on the moon. So we can hop, skip, jump to Mars. How you know it's not somebody already there on the other side of that planet planning to do something that we down here wouldn't believe if we could? And I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all, but I've always believed that there's been other intelligent sources watching this planet. My brother and I saw it when we were youngsters living in Watts. Saw it, couldn't deny it. So we're not alone. See, that's a lie that the government wants to tell you. We're not alone. And quiet is kept. I believe that our government is in cahoots with these spaceships and flying saucers and strange-looking creatures. Area 51 is no lie. It's no joke. Up on top, you know what? And since I'm talking about it, the weight is lifting off me. Because, you see, this is why old people die. Because they get weighted down and they can't talk through it. They can't think through it. All they want to do is, like my sister, Junie, I just want to die. I don't want to be here. I don't want to hear the voices anymore. I said, they love you. You know what my sister said? They don't love me. If they love me, they get the hell out of my life and leave me alone. The reason that they can't leave us alone when we get old is because we'll feel this heaviness and we'll die. Thank you for coming to my website. I am indeed glad. There's a portion in this book, Powernomics. It's really a good book. I want to read something from the introduction of this book by Claude Anderson, Dr. Claude Anderson. He even appears on these young millennials' Breakfast Club shows. That's where I saw him on YouTube, and I was impressed with how he talked so long and so much. He started coughing. He reminded me of me. At the time that he made that, he was 85 years old. I'm 77. So I'm in very good company. I can still think. My brain is still functioning. I know exactly what the hell I'm talking about. This is what Claude writes in his book. Despite the fact that integration began 50 years ago, Black Americans remain the primary targets of conservative hate groups, police brutality, and abusive government actions. According to the Federal Bureau of Investigation annual report, Blacks are the victims of approximately 67% of hate crimes, though they are only 12.4% of the nation's total population. With recent incidents such as 170 church burnings, Black men dragged to their death behind pickup trucks in Texas and Illinois, or shot 41 times in New York while reaching for a wallet, it is not difficult to understand how the tally quickly reaches 67%. The FBI's hate crime list does not even include soft crimes like denying Black people home mortgages, jobs, or the right to use the highways without being pulled over for driving while Black. Within every category of socioeconomic deprivation, Blacks represent 6 to 8 times the pro, now you get this and you listen very close, the proportionate number of the general population. The fact that Blacks are overrepresented on this nation's welfare, poverty, unemployment, homeless, drug addiction, and crime rolls is no accident and could come as no surprise. This function of racism is to be marginal, is to marginalize Black people. Now he's correct, and you know what? I'm going to tell you the truth. I have experienced racism in my life. I've been called the N-word. It didn't touch me as deep as it touched somebody in the South that went through that, because I had it relatively easy here. I mean, 3 collegiate degrees, went to school with the white people, with all the other people, respected, even taught in some of their higher institutions of learning. Me, I was given the privilege to speak. As a matter of fact, I was a radio personality, and I enjoyed the ambivalence as I looked in the face of many white people that were wondering, oh my God, how did he slip through? You could read the expressions, but I didn't allow it to cause me to hate. Let's get back to the good doctor's book. He says, racism is an undeniable factor in American society. That's right, he's right. It is distinct from and plays a greater role in life's prospects than any form of gender, class, ethnic, language, or religious discrimination. Contrary to prevailing myths, America has never been a colorblind society, yet racism continues to be ignored at all levels of government, while the nation's attention and resources are focused on less contentious issues. And let me add this, Hollywood is good for keeping that thing up. See, you know, when I was watching the Academy Awards, they said, well, you... feeling better that Blacks and non-whites are getting more movies. Oh, well, yes, it is getting slightly different. You know what? Why don't you go and get the Mongols and let them make a movie and then give them the best director's report? But I understand what they're saying. They're saying that it's been whitewashed all these years. Now it's our turn. Could it be the last turn? That's what I'm wondering. He goes on, Claude says that white society has an out-of-sight, out-of-mind attitude about racism and avoids any substantive discussions of, let alone actions against racism. the callous indifference, disrespect, and sometimes actual hatred that the majority society feels towards black people are creating conditions that are dangerously parallel to those in Germany prior to the Jewish Holocaust in the 1930s and 40s. Now, this is a bold statement by Dr. Anderson. Dr. Anderson is saying when you look at America today, you got to look at what was going on in Adolf's Germany right before they made him the chancellor. And with this two-party system, and mind you, Dr. Anderson doesn't believe in the Democrats or the Republicans. He's somewhat like myself. See, I stopped voting in the 1970s. I stopped voting and playing that mind game because that's all that is. Then it goes on and says, Daniel J. Goldhagen, author of Hitler's Willing Executioners, writes about the Holocaust and the perils that can be expected when any national government permits hatred of an unidentifiable minority group to fester without efforts to mitigate or diffuse the hatred. When such widespread hatred goes unchecked in society, the targeted minority group is at risk. This is why a lot of these people are up in arms about Black Lives Matter and the Hispanics now saying the same thing because they're saying, wait a minute, but really when you're looking at a Hispanic, you're looking at an Anglo. And so it's quite different from being black. The racial problem in America, as I continue to read, continues to exist because some ignore the problem and others simply do not know what to do. It is a latter group that I am addressing in this book. And that's why I bought it, because I heard Dr. Anderson talk and he was talking about his book. And I said, you know, I don't have that book and I need to get this book. And I'm glad that I did. And I hope that it's making sense to you. At least it's taking this weight off of me. And I feel like I can discuss it with you. He goes on and says that in 1994, in my first book, Black Labor, White Wealth, The Search for Power and Economic Justice, I wrote about the structural inadequacies that become a part of our society during slavery and the Jim Crow segregation. 7 years after that book was published, Dr. Anderson says that these structural inequalities remains unaddressed. Of course it is. Black labor, white wealth analyzed the historical relationship between whites and blacks and then tracked how the Western world used laws, policies, social customs to enrich itself through the unpaid labor of enslaved black Americans. And we know who built this country. This is me talking now. We did. Black people did. And that's why a lot of blacks and other minorities are asking for some kind of reparations for the work that our ancestors did, from which we are suffering in poverty, and the scale of having money in this country is unequal. Now, a lot of my white friends will say, well, but John, you worked, you were working in private industry. When you got into civil service, you early in your life, you bought a home. You were able to buy cars and pay for them. You were able to move up from an apartment to a home. You were able to assist your daughters going to one of the greatest universities in the world, UCLA, and grad schools across the country. And I don't hear you complaining. No, of course not, because I was whitewashed. And I've said that before. I'm a black man thinking like a white man. That is what this system causes many blacks to do. Therefore, those blacks forget their brothers and sisters. Oh, it happens all the time. My neighbors walk in their little white daughter, and she loves to walk on my rocks. She sees the rocks, and she loves to walk on it. She's the cutest little thing. God bless them. Her parents come from Chicago, and they moved here. And I don't know what he does, but, oh, listen to that. The baby started all the dogs barking. So black labor, white wealth documented how legal, political, and economic advantages were passed on to succeeding generations of white Americans. And these legacies of white preference effectively maldistributed nearly 100% of the nation's wealth and resources into the hands of the majority society and regulated blacks to a permanently dependent, non-competitive loser status. Dr. Anderson is correct. That's why I had to buy the book. And I understand and I see where, because the young blacks that won't go to school, that won't get up into the higher educational system, that won't advance themselves in doing what I did when I was that age, they will never, unfortunately, get ahead unless they get with the ball game. Dr. Anderson goes on and says, in our society, democracy, many have forgotten or simply do not know what the Federalist Papers, the foundation of the Constitution, laid out the responsibility of a majority to protect the rights of the minority in a majority-ruled social democracy. Now, that's good because I needed to know that. But remember, I was a self-starter. My daddy taught me to get a job and work. Since I was working in the system, whitewashed as I was, I contributed to the system. And I did not come from a picking cotton slave background, so I didn't think that I was a slave. I could have made more money. I could have been richer than I am today if I had read this book when I was a young man and had a thorough understanding of the words in the English language and these federal constitution bylaws and things like that. I'd probably be rich or a militant in the Black Panther Party. Thus, Dr. Anderson goes on and says, it is the responsibility of the white majority to protect the rights of the black minority. Not surprisingly, that protection has not occurred. Instead, the white majority has made the black race a permanent, involuntary minority and has systematically denied generations of blacks sufficient means to protect their own rights and compete in mainstream society. Now, Dr. Anderson is right, but not in all cases, because I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. James Brown just said, just open the door. I get it myself. All right? Say it loud. I'm black and I'm proud. Now, I take that upon me, and that's where I learned how to do my life. Powernomics, the National Plan to Empower Black America, proposes a plan of action for blacks to create a new, prosperous, and empowered community that builds upon the yet unrealized competitive advantages of black America. That's why Powernomics is a good book to read, right alongside of Eric Mason's Urban Apologetics. Because if you're going to keep God in this, and you're going to keep it right, and as I told you before, Eric Mason is looking at this thing and he's saying, you know, we've been whitewashed about religion. Well, let's get God right. Let's get the God story right. And then we can handle this situation the way that it should be handled. Still reading the introduction to this, he says, the economic, political, and educational action steps, principles, strategies, and models that are offered in this book are based upon analysis of a complex web of racial monopolies and other structural impediments that continue to drive blacks deeper into an underclass structure.
Now, you know what? When you read that, that doesn't mean that, oh, that's my mailman dropping mail in the box. And I hope there he goes. Strong young black man. Came here from Louisiana, from around the New Orleans area. He been walking this beat, delivering mail, going on a year and a half now. And the boy don't take no time off. Make me real proud. Because if he do that, he can pay for a house. He said he got a house full of kids. Good for him. He's working for his babies. Working to make it happen. I remember back in the day, I used to see the mailman, and it made me feel proud. Now when we see the mailman, we got to pray for him, because some thug would try to rob him. Anyhow, let me continue to read. It says, Dr. Anderson says that they also came from a comparative study of wealthy and powerful minority groups that have lifted themselves into competitive positions within the majority society. This book is a plan specifically intended for Black America, because no other group will support the elevation of Blacks to a position or group prosperity of respect and competitiveness. He's right. Nobody else is going to care for us. We've got to care for ourselves. We've got to love ourselves and love one another. We got to teach these young men how to stop shooting at other black young men. You're taking parts of your army out. See, that's how come I can't let this heavy weight set heavy on my heart and kill me. Because there is a way to do this. And I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to keep studying. I'm going to keep admonishing. I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to keep calling on God. I'm going to keep asking you to do it. Because it has to be done if our people are going to be lifted up out of this mire of foolishness. Oh, let me stop preaching. Anderson goes on and says, it is not in the best interest of others to help blacks become more competitive. Thus, it is up to Black America to pull itself up by its bootstraps. Empowerment will not happen by chance, accident, or wishes. Right. It will require purposeful planning. You know what? When I saw the clips of the Academy Awards and I saw these rich black people and all this, I said, man, wouldn't it be great if they can really put their monies together? And hey, man, give me an hour on a radio station. Somebody build a black radio station that listens to all the black voices. And give me an hour on that radio station. I'll do an hour a day for the rest of my life just reading books like this and stimulating us to love one another, to believe in one another, to make this thing happen. I'm in the studio doing this. This man called me and said, when are we going to do a Zoom cast? I said, man, that's not going to work. X, that ain't going to work. What we got to do is we got to find something like Dr. Anderson says through purposeful planning. Power Economics, the national plan to empower Black America, picks up where Black labor, white wealth left off. It presents a conceptual framework and a plan to lead Black America to political and economic self-sufficiency and competitiveness by the year 2005. Where are we now? We're in 2021. Let me see when this book was written. I just ordered it. Now, you may ask me, well, why are you just getting this book, John? This book has been out a while. Let me see when the first printing was. See. Da, 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 power economics. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's 1997, eh? Yeah. Yeah. Way back there. And I'm just now reading it. Now, from the time this book was published up to now, why haven't black people gotten together and use
Dr. Claude Anderson's national plan to empower Black America. Why can't Black people get together? If the reading of this sounds good to you, and you know it damn sure sounds good to me, why haven't we done it? Why didn't somebody bring me this book while I was pastoring the church and say, John, why don't you teach a lesson in this? Why don't you go on the radio and talk about this? We don't love each other enough to do that. Now we're killing each other in the streets. And every time one of our people do something asinine and stupid, we trying to jump behind him because we trying to get some money to beat the white man down. You're not going to win the battle like that because we are in the minority in this country. And that's not the way you do it. Well, listen, I've about come to the end of this today. We will continue this. You know I will. Because it took that heavy weight up off me. Now I know why I bought this book. Because I was on Amazon and I said, you know what? I've heard of Claude Anderson. Why don't I have any of his books in my library? Because I had to get rid of all those theology books. That's why. See? I had all those, out there. What does humility look like?
Well,
see, what does humility look like? No. What does aggression look like? We must aggressively attack the problem that has come upon our community. Now, I know that my white friends, and I have a few, they know that I'm not a violent man, and I never try to hurt anybody and stuff like that. But I love Black people. I do. I love my tribe. I love my tribe. Just like I'm sure that all the white people love the tribes that they're in. But people like Al Sharpton, people like Congresswoman Maxine Waters, people like that attorney Plum, is that his name? Preachers like T.D. Jakes, Creflo Dollar, let's get Eddie Long. I don't think his soul is resting. And Fred Price. Positive confession is not the way to get through with God. You need a national plan to empower Black America. And no preacher is going to help you do that. Because if you listen very close to the dialogue of a preacher, he's going to be giving you some exegesis that had to do with a set of people some thousands of years ago that is not facing a community that is fading away in this 2021. Thank you for thinking about me. I'm going to continue to think about you. And please, if you can pray for me, because I was feeling down when I first started doing this webcast. And I'm glad that I had the sense enough to pick up Dr. Anderson's book. And I really appreciate him writing this text. You ought to pick it up. It will bless you. Let me read what this says on the back. Just like Alice in Wonderland, Dr. Claude Anderson, in this new book, Powernomics, The National Plan to Empower Black America, gives the reader the chance to follow racism to see how far down the rabbit hole it goes. And it goes a while. Thank you, Dr. Anderson. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to get in touch with him if he's still alive and send him an email. I thank God for his work and his love for the tribe. God bless you.